soon kind of feeling, but maybe there's something life enriching.
And Christine, I think I understand what you're saying about like forcing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like Margaret herself, you know, she seems to be forcing herself to be sad, even though she might not have to be. But I think that Goldman in the book experiences a lot of different emotions, a lot of hatred maybe for humans and pity and fear. And he just goes through such a range of emotions, but yet he uses those and he has such, what they're talking about in the end, such a store of images, such an enriched life, that he may not die happy, but he dies joyful. If you can see a difference in the terms.
I was talking about Rebecca.
Yeah. And I agree with what you're saying, but overall, I think that, I mean, maybe that's part of being more true to ourselves, that we don't always feel like we have to be happy. I mean, sometimes you just can't get happy and you shouldn't have to. I mean, it makes me so mad when, you know, one day you just are sad and everyone's like, oh, come on, cheer up, and like, let me be sad. I mean, it's okay to do that, and I think that that's part of not letting ourselves be ourselves, is that we don't recognize that there's more. The ultimate goal is not just to be happy, but to experience a lot of different emotions.
What is happiness? Oh, sorry.
I was just kidding. That's funny, because I guess I define happiness as always being happy.
No.
And what is happiness mean to you?
I guess I see happiness is, well, first of all, it's a state of mind, in that there's nothing you can do, really, and there's nothing you can say or be to be happy. It's just, you could be happy if you were the richest person in the world. You could be happy if you were the poorest person in the world. You could be happy if you were in a different country. You could be happy. I mean, it just doesn't matter, really. It's all
right.
How you view the world. And I think that when your happiness doesn't always mean being happy, it's just kind of accepting your life the way it is, I think. And saying, I'm satisfied. I'm happy. I'm happy in the sense that if I am sad, I'm happy in that sadness, and then I'm experiencing that. It's my life. I'm happy with that. Or if, you know, I experience death or mourning or whatever, I'm content with that.
I guess that the difference in definition is, because I would say that happy is smiling. All I mean is being really happy and sunshiny kind of about everything. And I think that's the difference.
You can be happy.
No.
Okay, Christine.
I was going to say what Brad was describing sounded like contentedness.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if there is a difference or need be a difference between happiness and contentedness, but that's just what it sounded
like. Yeah, let's think more of peace of mind.
Yeah.
But I guess I see happiness. When people say happiness, I have peace of mind, I guess. I thought most people would think that. Most people would think that, but maybe they don't. I like to hear other people's definitions of happiness.
This actually will be an important word later on, mm-hmm. So I wouldn't mind talking about it a little bit.
Okay, this isn't my definition of happiness, but I think it's an example of how happiness isn't the best, or how happy isn't the best thing to be. It's just, look at, you know, clowns and think of how they're always, they've got this painted smile on the outside, but lots of times, you know, you watch the clowns do their little skits and things, and they're walked on, you know, and they always keep a smile on their face. And so, if the definition of happiness is always having a smile on your face and stuff, then maybe being happy all the time isn't the best thing to be. And I think that happiness for me is pizza.
So you've been unhappy since you've been up here, Kristen?
No, lately happiness, the meaning has been changing.
Sausage pizza.
Not tofu pizza.
To me, it sounds like you're changing. I don't know. I think I use happy in the same sense of being. It's almost like I define it so I can say that I'm always happy, because that's what's, you know, supposed to be, you know, it's better if you're happy. It's the way I've always, you know.
You should.
Yeah. And I don't know, it was just suddenly this new word that they haven't used was joy, and that joy can include happy and sadness. It was just neat to me.
I think it's different depending on the context of the situation, because if someone came up to me and I was really upset about something and asked me if I was, you know, if I was happy, you know, I'd probably say no at the time. But then if someone else that I hadn't seen for a long time came up and said, you know, are you happy with your life? Are you happy with, you know, everything? Then I'd say, yeah, you know, I'm happy with my life. I'm not, you know, upset all the time. But I think it just depends, really. I think that's the different definitions. You know,
Aaron, did you have your hand up?
I know someone said contentment, but my feeling is almost the being satisfied. Because I know, like, if I was to set a goal for myself on maybe like on a paper to get an A, then I really believed that I felt like it was an A, and I put in all the time, and then I got an A minus. I mean, an A minus is not bad, but I'm not going to be totally happy. I'm not totally satisfied with myself and my product because I didn't quite get the goal. And it's just being, I mean, I'm not saying I'm not going to be happy the rest of my life because of that one thing, but in relevant to that one situation, I'm not satisfied. Something's missing.
There's a really significant implication, I think, to that. Let's kick this around a little bit. Todd, did you want to say something?
Well, this is jumping back to it. Of hanging on to happiness, hanging on to self. We have these instances in our life when we experience real happiness and then we also experience real sorrow. It seems like either one we really can hang on to for very long time. We have to accept the happiness, but we also have to accept the sorrow. Go on and not keep trying to hang on to it and dragging, you know, dragging whatever with us and wherever we go. Kind of keep, all right. I guess I'm at the Elmer's theology of acceptance, where we have to accept, you know, accept the bad times, the sorrow. And then just, you know, let go of that when the plan comes, so we can move on to fully accepting the happiness also. When we fully accept the happiness, perhaps we can give that to somebody else. And there, in the midst of accepting yourself. You know. This was thrown in my face yesterday. I'm dragging around a big chain of something along it behind me. I've got to let go of myself. And doing that, maybe I can go on and see a little bit more of happiness. Be more accepting of that which is around me.
I don't know if there's any correspondence, but when we started talking about this, thought maybe there's some sort of relationship in our own lives between happiness, at least maybe long-term overall happiness, and the friendship between Narcissus and Goldman. Or maybe that's more contentment, because that friendship between those two parts of their lives, even though they were apart, there was still something about that friendship that kept going and brought it back together. And I was just wondering what other people thought. I don't really know, but it just seemed like happiness in our own lives, at least if it doesn't require that friendship, or it is that friendship between those two parts. But
think I would say that from what we were saying before about joy and happiness and the difference, I think that maybe their friendship was more joyful because, maybe not, but maybe because it hurt, they to some extent hurt each other, and they sort of lived each other's pain. And Narcissus saw the pain in Goldman's face when he came back from his journey, and he, at the end, he, you know, felt a stab to his heart, and there was that pain there. And I don't know if in my definitions that would be happiness in the smiley sense, but it would be a deep joy, a deep happiness. Does that at all address what you're saying?
Yeah.
Let me just ask this question. Were Goldman and Narcissus happy? If someone said to you, were Goldman and Narcissus happy?
Happy
together. Happy. As people. Yeah, were they happy? Michelle?
I would say that would be looking at it as more of an overall thing, and I would answer yes, because I think they're both doing what they want to do. I think that if Goldman had stayed at the wherever, the place with Narcissus, that he wouldn't have been happy because that isn't ultimately what he wanted to do. And he was out, even though he was struggling and faced death a lot of times and had all these problems, that he still was doing what he wanted to do. So overall, he was happy with his life.
Anyone disagree?
I disagree. I don't think they were happy because they were always struggling with thoughts that maybe they hadn't chosen the right way, it seems like, or that they are each living such different lives, and yet, like Goldman would think that Narcissus's life was so good, and Narcissus thought, well, Goldman was so fulfilled, and so I don't really think they were happy with their own lives.
Okay, Darren and Tom.
I think each of them had accepted the fact that the other was different, and they were living their own lives, and so I think in a way they were happy. We talked about, well, I think they were.
That's why I said that the friendship maybe corresponds to the happiness, because no, I wouldn't say that the individual characters were happy. I could be happy looking at the black death and that type of thing. But I think something in their friendship always brought them joy. And yes, it challenged them, and yes, they gave them doubts, but we try to think of Goldman and Narcissus as the same person that lives within each of us. Then maybe that's a got to think of it a little bit differently.
Okay, Brandon and Christine.
I kind of agree with Christine, what she said last night, that they had a lot of doubts and things of their life in the whole in the end. And, I don't know, I guess because my definition of happiness means contentment, I didn't really sense that they were content totally. Goldman probably would be more content than Narcissus, I guess, because of the ending. And he said, yeah, you know, I went through Black Death, and I murdered some guys, but, you know, I've lived, and I've seen my mother, and I'm ready to die. So for me, I guess, I would see Goldman as more content, and that way having more happiness in his life. Because Narcissus, in the end, felt like he had more doubts when he got together, for me anyway. The Narcissist was really saying, was it right for me to just stay inside this monastery and not go out and experience life?
I think that I didn't really know this before, but that my definition of happiness is probably contentment too. And so in that way, like what Kai was talking about, that it said that they could have a joyful life which had sadness and happiness in it. I think that they probably have joyful lives, but not happy lives.
I just wanted to, it's hard for me to think in terms of them as two separate characters. You put them together, like Tom was saying, as being different parts in each of us, then their friendship, if you want to use that as that they're being present in, both of them being present in each of us as a person, then I think that they would find happiness together as separate entities in themselves. I don't think that they would.
Darren, did you have a hand up?
Yeah, I just had a question about what Darren said. Didn't Narcissus say that he was glad that Lady stayed, but yet, and he was also glad that Goldman can come back because he had lived the life that he could not live and because of the way he was, and that he was fulfilled because Goldman had shown him all these things and come back?
I guess I just, when I was reading the last chapter two, there's a lot of inner thinking and dialogue between the two, where it sounded like the Narcissist had an equal in Goldman, instead of someone just under him, like always. He had someone that really challenged his life, I guess, and really made him start thinking if he had made the right choice by staying the way he was. I guess I saw more doubt in Narcissus at the end throughout the rest of the book. And I guess because of that, maybe I think he then wasn't content.
Tom and Chris.
Well, if we go along and think of the two characters as part of the same person, and you go on and then Goldman starts having these doubts. First, they kind of recognize each other as equals. And I think that's the same sort of journey all of us take, recognizing these two parts of ourselves as equals and their friends. And then one part starts dying. You know, in most of us, eventually one of the parts will kind of fade away. But it's not going to completely die. I think it was when Goldman started to die is when Narcissus started to have the doubts. It was like part of Goldman had to remain living in Narcissus. And when he died, those doubts had to stay in Narcissus as part of Goldman, since they were the same person.
I can't answer it to you.
I think mine was kind of along the same line that that through their friendship, which is kind of what we all are trying to, Lisa said that neither one can be content or happy or joyful even on their own. But when we learn to combine, when we learn to allow the two to blend together and to reach the point where we're happy, then we can to reach the point where we're joyful or content. And that is when we can be content, not as separate entities, but when we learn to accept that they're both part. That's sort of what part of this class is to recognize that they are not separate, that we aren't separate inside, and that once we find our wholeness, we find our joy.
Goldman says he's curious. I think it's curious about dying, but I'm not sure. So Narcissus asks, why curious? And Goldman said, Well, maybe a bit stupid of me, but I'm really curious about it. Not of the beyond Narcissus. I think about that very little, and if I may say so openly, I no longer believe in it. There is no beyond. The dried up tree is dead forever. The frozen bird does not come back to life, nor does a man after he has died. One may continue to think of him for a while after he's gone, but that doesn't last long either. No, I'm curious about dying only because it is still my belief or my dream that I am on the road toward my mother. I hope death will be a great happiness, a happiness as great as that of love, fulfilled love. I cannot give up the thought that instead of death with my scythe, it will be my mother who will come to take me back to her, who will lead me back to non-being and innocence. So he's basically equating happiness with non-being, innocence, with release, with surcease of sorrow, as Poe might say. My personal sense of the image of happiness is that's exactly what happiness is. It is surcease of sorrow. And one of the problems, I think, with the seeking of happiness, the reason why we have a hard time defining it is because it's become a generic term. And the reason it's become a generic term is primarily because to experience real happiness, we also have to experience real sorrow. In order to understand that the surcease of sorrow, we have to know what sorrow is. And so a lot of us are always feeling like we should be happy, we should strive to be happy, we should strive to understand happiness, and you can't do that without also striving to understand sorrow. So when you talk about contentment, one of the things that I think about that makes contentment a real positive experience is that it's not a battle against anything. It's the kind of acceptance, as you said, of what is, which strikes me as not being happiness. Happiness is an agitated state to me, not a contented state. Happiness is the child who is rolling around on the floor with a big bright smile and happiness is that bright smiling sunshiny face of anyone who is busy laughing away. And the thing to think about too when you think about happiness and laughter is, what do we laugh at? I mean, most of us, when we think of happiness, think about humor and laughter, and what is it that we usually laugh at? Think back, the last time we really had one of those great moments of laughter, most of the time. Do you have to say your hand up?
Yeah, I think we laugh at things that are sad or that aren't really bad things that happen and stuff.
Right.
Or funny things that we did that we know are part of it.
That you didn't laugh at usually at the time.
Yeah. Our weaknesses, our faults.
Remember with that line from that Joni Mitchell tune? When she's talking about laughing and crying, it's the same release. Maybe I'm too old. Anyway, happiness. We'll be talking more about happiness later, and I think I want to sort of move away from the happiness idea just briefly, and get back to what I consider to be the sort of most important part of this book. Looks like we may even get done with this book a little bit sooner. Way back at the very end, let's sort of back up a bit. Last time we stopped talking really about the book, it was back when Goldman and Narcissus are reunited at the very end. And Narcissus saves Goldman. Goldman doesn't have to kill the priest because the priest turns out to be a friend who is a powerful priest and could assure his release. And they run back to the monastery. And what happens to the two of them as they are reunited? Are they the same loving friends they were before? What's the difference between them if there is any difference? What's the sameness between them if there is any sameness? What's it like for them now that they're reunited?
They're equals.
Yeah.
Before, Narcissus was his mentor, and he took Goldman by the hand and said, "You aren't supposed to be a monk." And Goldman was always questioning them. When they come back, they share knowledge, and they both recognize that. And that's a real important thing for both of them, for Narcissus to be able to learn about Goldman's art, and to learn about art, and to learn about life. And the world to learn that about the philosophies and that they're equal. And for Goldman, it's is what he learns from Narcissus.
Okay, so you
are they equal when they get reunited or after the sculpture was made, after it had created some art, and Narcissus realizes that they are equal?
What do you think?
I think didn't even Narcissus say that they were equal even before then? I think just when he realized all that he had been through, what he'd done, it's when he realized they were equals.
But later,
I don't know.
Later on, he comments that with the art and the that part of Goldman that made him realize that they were equal. Maybe he thought it before, but I don't know if he really believed it.
Maybe it was the realization for both of them. It was cemented that they were probably equals before. They probably were always equals, but the realization of that.
I don't think until he came back from his last trip, where after breaking his ribs and stuff, that Goldman kind of gave in, that his opinion even was, or that he could, that his respect for himself was equal to that of Narcissus. It was almost like he still looked up to him. He was afraid of coming back and being looked, that might be bad or something. Like, he still saw that to me as a, like, he was always wondering, well, what would Narcissus, maybe not what would Narcissus do, but what would Narcissus think of this, or that kind of thing. Even to the almost the end.
So you're saying he had lost everything when he came back?
I don't know what you're saying.
I don't think he had lost anything. I think about what I said. Listen, when he came back is when he said, you know, he was never able to break down in front of him again, but now he was, and maybe that was the point where Goldman considered them equal anyway, is where he could now, it didn't matter if he broke down in front of him or not. And maybe Narcissus realized it earlier, and Goldman realized it later. That's the way most things happen with those two.
Do you remember I don't have it underlined in my book, but do you remember how Goldman reacted when he was Narcissus, who discovered him in the prison, and was ultimately saved him? Remember? How did he react? How did he respond? Does anyone remember? Yeah.
He tried not to act overly excited, and he just kind of acted almost cute, you know? But it says that inside he was just so excited.
He almost broke down and cried again, but he remembered the last time he'd done it, and he stopped it because he didn't want to show weakness in front of Narcissus like he had done before.
And then what did he realize as they're traveling together over the road back to the cloister? I don't remember exactly where it is, but it's in that first little section where Narcissus, where Goldman at first was wondering if he should be humiliated by being discovered in this position by his old friend. And then he gets to this other realization where it's all right. I think it happens just, yes?
Are you talking about when he realizes that Narcissus?
I'm thinking about Goldman now, because this is the way I'm remembering it, and I didn't underline it in my book, but there's a book there at some point, or a paragraph, where there are times when Goldman is responding to what he might think would be Narcissus's judgment of him and the life that he chose. And at first, when they meet, he is concerned about that again, and chooses to hide his feelings. And at some point, he realizes that he's no longer interested in his friend's judgment. What he's interested in is his friend's friendship. Yes?
But then he also wasn't. I was really surprised that he admitted to Narcissus that he would have killed them if to get away. And Narcissus, you know, said, would you have really killed me if, you know, if that was your chance to get away? And he said, yeah, he realized how scared he was of dying and that he would have done that. That really surprised me that he admitted that to Narcissus, because it was like, I don't know, it surprised me.
I don't think he would have killed Narcissus.
No.
He said he would have killed
a monk. Yeah.
And probably not even a monk with the same order as Narcissus.
Yeah. But still, just that he admit that to Narcissus, saying that he'd go as far as killing another person to free himself. I mean, I thought that was kind of a big opening up. I don't know. It just surprised me.
What was Narcissus' response to that?
We both were embarrassed.
All right, that's another. What is embarrassment? I mean, I think that's a real important kind of part of how they responded to each other. Yeah.
You feel uncomfortable. You can't totally be yourself, and you and be part of that came out. I think it's a part of being human. And
yeah, Christine, that Kathleen and Christine.
Sort of a fear of what that other person is thinking about you when you give them a truth about yourself.
Okay.
It's usually something unexpected, I think, because neither of them expected to be in that situation and to be talking about what they were, and so they sort of didn't really know how to act.
Okay, now we're getting to it.
I think maybe I found that paragraph.
Okay.
It says, but he found a fitting relationship to Narcissus.
Go ahead, read it.
It was no longer a relationship of dependence, but one of equality and reciprocity. He could be the guest of the superior mind without humiliation, since the other man had given recognition to the creative power in him. During their journey, he looked forward with increasing eagerness to revealing himself to him, to making his inner world visible to him in works and images. But sometimes he also worried.
Okay, that's close, and that's getting actually it's around the same issue. Tom, you have your hand up? You're just scratching your nose?
I was just going to add something about embarrassment. It's just kind of the uncomfortableness at knowing that somebody else knows you're human.
Okay. That's much more what I'm talking about. A person who is in power, a person who makes judgments, is not embarrassed. In this particular case, that's where they suddenly realize that they are on an equal footing. One who is a respected member, respected abbot of an important religious community, the other who is a common adulterer and thief, suddenly find that they are embarrassed with each other out of a sense of equality. A very interesting kind of starting point for their re-association. And that quote that you just read also shows that now, Goldman wants to share his experiences not to to confess, not to understand, but to give a gift, which is a very different kind of perspective as well, how that works out. What does Narcissus do with this gift? How does Narcissus respond to the gift that Goldman wishes to give? It's not a mysterious question, it's a fairly clear one. What's Narcissus's response to Goldman?
He accepts it.
He accepts it, and he nurtures it, makes it easy, he welcomes Goldman in. He is not afraid of what Goldman may show or expose. In fact, he even gives him a workshop. Yeah, that's primarily where, as soon as Narcissus realizes what Goldman's life was like, he says, well, then you must create. What you must do is you must show me what it was, not tell me what it was that you experienced, but show me what it was. The experiences that Goldman has, he could talk about only so far. What he must do in order to bring that beauty, that pain, that happiness and sorrow into the world of Narcissus is to create a tangible manifestation of it, which in this particular case is art. There are many different paragraphs that describe art as the metaphor. And what happens to Narcissus when he sees that the sort of work that Goldman has been struggling with for those many years there? And how do they react to each other in the process of that coming into fruition? It's a real important part.
Goldman was really nervous, I remember. He said he felt like the same way he felt when he first did that first drawing for Nicholas. really didn't know how the other person would react, didn't know if it was going to be good enough, something like that. And both of them were very impressed and surprised at, that's what I got, at what they saw, that they really liked it and were very impressed with his work.
Okay, let's come back now, and when he comes back with Narcissus and Modesty and their relationship to it. Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, after you looked at it, weren't they both embarrassed again a little bit? Not really knowing, you know, kind of Narcissus said, you know, well, I don't really know much about art and I don't know what to say. And then he kind of went and said what he thought it meant, and he was kind of like, right on. And then kind of afterwards, weren't they embarrassed, and then he said, Michael, it's, you know, go get something to eat. Is that the same part?
Yeah, I think that's an important part of it.
So where I sense a little embarrassment when I read it.
And what, is the embarrassment the same kind of embarrassment that happens to them in the prison?
I think maybe it's an embarrassment. You know, Narcissus saw this great work of art, and he was kind of embarrassed, you know, that it was something so great, you know, that, you know, he couldn't really say much about it because, you know, it was just so incredible. And I think Goldman was a little embarrassed because Narcissus said he couldn't say much about it, and then went and with his great mind said so much about it. And they were both kind of embarrassed by how wonderful each other were.
Is that what you were going to say?
Well, I can't forget.
To my mind, that the doubts that Narcissus starts having start with that piece of art, primarily. I mean, they're there. Go ahead.
I thought that too. I thought it was really interesting how at the end, Goldman is resolving all the last things in his life before he dies. He's telling Narcissus everything that's on his mind, and he makes his last little journey. He finishes everything all up, and as he finishes up is when Narcissus says things like, maybe I should have told him that I loved him more. Like when he was younger, he held back and thought, well, maybe this isn't the best, and now he has these doubts, well, maybe I should have, and maybe I should have done this, and now what do? I'm left, and I have to get this all worked out. It's kind of like the plates are turned, because he's been helping Goldman do that his whole life.
So if this sort of doubting happens, as Tom had pointed out, and on you, that as Goldman begins the process of dying and starts withdrawing, Narcissus starts his doubting process in earnest. And since I think it starts with his seeing the work of art and being transformed by it in some way, what is this work of art? What, not just what is the object itself, but what does this symbolize, this piece of art that is so shaking to Narcissus?
It's almost like Goldman's last will and testament. Mm-hmm.
Also how deep their friendship is.
Okay, keep going. Let's do it. Go ahead, David.
He mentioned one part of the book where he, I think it was when he was working for the master, and he was saying that what kind of life the master led, but his work, you know, people die, but his work always lived on in the past. I think maybe that's what Narcissus can see, that even though Goldman is gone, he's really still there.
Okay, I think that's real true, and that's an important part of getting at something else, something a little, something maybe a little more metaphysical, perhaps. Here is this one, the Narcissus, who has his life set out for him, who knows people, who is responsible for the religious community, who always is able to help people be what they are, whose job is service, who's suddenly confronted by a piece of art that this roving, the adulterous thief has made before him, and he has transformed.
I think it has something to do with the way that people look at God. I mean, I think it represents his faith in a way. But looking at it a different way, you know, you can look at it one way, the way he did, and then there's Goldman's way of looking at it. Maybe it's two different ways of looking at the same thing, and for the first time he's looking at it a different way.
And what does that do to him, to see it a different way?
It makes him realize that honestly, it makes him realize that his way wasn't always the right way, but then he recognized that before I noticed in Goldman, so I couldn't say that was the first time he'd noticed that. I'm not sure.
Go ahead, now.
It was through that piece of art that Goldman entered Narcissus. That was the point where the doubting started, but since Narcissus actually entered Goldman entered Narcissus, that is the time that he started dying. He felt regret that that was finished. And maybe that's the point where they finally came in contact in some way.
Yeah, I think that's probably an excellent point about that, is the penetration, penetration through a media that had no words, had no logic.
I don't understand. I mean,
wasn't the sculpture kind of symbolic of Father Daniel? Or somebody that they both loved from the start, they both had in common. And from Narcissus looked at it, and instead of it just being a piece of art, you know, a piece of wood somebody carved into a nice figure, it was something for both of their souls, something they both shared. That's what I understood. And it bonded them together, knowing that they both knew this person, and they could both see the likeness in the sculpture, the pain, the sorrow, the happiness, everything wrapped up in this piece of wood that was sculpted. And I think, from what I understood, was Narcissus didn't, for the first time, he really understood art. That it wasn't just something that looked nice, but it was somebody's soul made into something. And he understood that, I think, because they shared common bond.
Kind of in relation to what Brent was saying, how he realized that art was not just nice, that it had a soul, or whatever, maybe that was the beginnings of the realizations for him, which made him realize that maybe Goldman had, through all of his experiences and such, where I guess he was, saw his lifetime and saw his soul, and in reflection to himself, in relation to what Narcissus told him at the end of the book, realized that he was not complete or not whole.
I didn't hear the last part.
That Narcissus realized that he himself did not yet have what Goldman had. Kind of in relation to the book, did not have this. So,
did you all hear that? Okay, I think that's sort of getting on to what it was for me, Christine, which is not saying it's right, but I think what Narcissus realized is that he had spent his life serving humanity, serving the church, serving the monastery, and suddenly realized that all is dust, and this particular one manifestation could speak so well and so clearly, not just to him with Abbot Daniel, but also in a way just like the Madonna struck Goldman that first time. And that art somehow is suddenly, as Tom said, he realized what art was that he never realized before. He realized the power that exists in feeling. He realized the power that exists not in words or mathematics or in control. For the first time, it struck him to the quick. Yeah.
I was just reading, I found the part right when Narcissus had just been looking at the figure and he turned around. And it says, Narcissus turned to him, and immediately he felt relieved. In his friend's narrow face, he saw flower, something that not flower there since his boyhood years. A smile, an almost timid smile on that face of mind and will. A smile of love and surrender, a shimmer, as though all its loneliness and pride had been pierced for a second and nothing shone from it but a heart full of joy.
Pierced by the intuitiveness, pierced by the nonverbal, pierced by the feeling. But that doubt, which was planted by the kind of piercingness of, do you have a point? Really comes to an important fruition at the very end. And that very last comment is what I'd sort of like to talk about briefly before we break. And let me just read this last paragraph out loud. I'm sure some of you have read it before since I gave you full warning, but I thought it was really important. Now the sick man opened his eyes again and looked for a long while into his friend's face. He said farewell with his eyes, and with a sudden movement, as though he were trying to shake his head, he whispered, "How will you die when your time comes, Narcissus, since you have no mother? Without a mother, one cannot love. Without a mother, one cannot die." What he murmured after that could not be understood. Those two last days, Narcissus sat by his bed and a day and night and watched his life ebb away. Goldman's last words burned like fire in his heart. Why did those last words burn like fire in his heart?
Because they're so true.
You'll have to be more specific than that, Todd.
All of his life, Narcissus had been in control, had been wise and understanding. Yet this understanding of that, it came from a rational, mind-oriented sense, and not just a sense, but a feeling of depth, or realness, wholeness.
But I think Goldman maybe gave Narcissus a mother when he gave him, you know, in the statue of Father Daniel, because, you know, it said that he was pierced, and it mentioned he saw a look of surrender on his face. And maybe at that point that he did give him a mother. Maybe that's what Narcissus was thinking about in his heartburn.
The first thing I thought of when I read that the first time was that Narcissus had never done what he had helped Goldman to do in the beginning. Like, going back to find his mother, maybe mother isn't exactly, for Narcissus, the same thing as it was for Goldman. But he'd never gone through that process.
What do you think the mother is? Pardon me? Certainly, that's part of it. I mean, that's a rather, forgive me, rather pregnant statement. And there it is, referring to the mother. And the mother is this one theme that keeps reoccurring in Goldman's life. And now suddenly, Narcissus is aware of the fact that somehow the mother has something to do with death. What is that about? I mean, we usually think of motherhood, we think of birth. We don't think of death. So what is this sort of label, symbology of what's going on?
It must have something to do with when Goldman saw the woman giving birth before, and saw the extreme pain in that, and that there was pain and birth and death all mixed together. So that,
almost like you have to experience your mother, that's life, before you can die, and he hadn't done that yet, and Goldman had.
The pains and the happiness.
You guys. Go ahead, David. Okay, I'll continue.
going on along with what Tom said about, if I understood him right, that maybe Goldman thought his mother was his god. And maybe Goldman was trying to tell Narcissus that Steph that maybe you need something more real in your life. Maybe something, well, I can't say that his mother wasn't present either, but.
Virgin Mary, mother was his own mother. What else was mother?
She was a part that said, it's okay, go out and try these things and do these things. I did.
Okay, the part that was the sensual side of him, the side that went out and had experiences that were split pleasure, pleasant. But what else was mother? Okay, what else? Mother was in some ways all the women that he had. But what else was mother?
Death.
Through
the black death, there's the sweetness of death is mother.
The arms of the mother that he speaks about is not just the mother of sensual pleasure, but also sensual pain. It's not just childbirth, but it's also death. What is this sort of talking about? And in some ways, that's real awkward for us to see, because we are a product of a different kind of religious dogma, very different than the one that Goldman refers to. But as I think I've said before, the feminine aspect at one time was, in fact, the dominant aspect of Homo sapiens history. There's a whole book about that called When God Was a Woman. What they talk about is the woman-related goddess, the great goddess. And the great goddess was not a sexual being, although it certainly was that too, but was also part of the great cycle of life, and birth and death were not different, they were exactly the same. The sensual pleasures and the sensual pains, the black and the white, were not separate parts of a long linear line. They were the same within the same circle. So what Goldman is suddenly realizing is that the mother is the great, for him, is the great unifier that combines all of these issues, that allows for pain and suffering, that makes no distinction between the joy and sorrow, and accepts and embraces all that is in a non-judgmental way. When you think about the most powerful part of motherhood today, we think of a certain kind of love, a love that is all-embracing, all-accepting, an unlimited kind of love. When you think of a good mother is one who will embrace their child and will constantly give that kind of love without any judgment, without any holding back. That kind of acceptance of the negative and the positive is part of what Goldman is telling Narcissus he has not developed the capacity to do, in which case it will be very difficult for him to surrender.
He has not developed the capacity to unify all that.
Mm-hmm. That's basically what I think is going on, as symbolized by the mother. It's something that we all have that problem with, because we lack that feminine side as a model.
So he's using the mother as a means for the unifying. He's just saying an excuse, kind of like. Is that what you're saying?
As a metaphor, yeah, not an excuse. As a metaphor. And what he's saying to Narcissus is that, Narcissus, you will not be able to surrender because you have not been able to experience that unity. And Narcissus realizes that, yeah, just like he was having a hard time surrendering to the piece of art, just as he was pierced to the quick by the realization that there are other ways of experiencing God, although he might tolerate someone else's way. He sent Goldman off because he knew he had to do it. He hasn't realized it himself. So Goldman's last great gift was piercing his heart and making him realize that he gave him the pain that he never allowed himself to heal through the metaphor of the mother.
Thank you very much.
Is that clear?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean, that is sort of... I hate, in some ways, doing the lecturing thing, because that's the way I see it. What I'd rather you rather than think that that's right, I'd rather you kind of think about how you felt about it, what your responses were to that very provocative part of it. The book is very provocative in a lot of ways, as it talks about mother and femininity and sensual pleasures and all that stuff, especially in the context of a person who feels great faith and great and is on a spiritual quest in addition. Because that's not a part that we think of. When you think of spirituality, we don't think of sexuality. When we think of spirituality, we don't think of selfishness and sensual pleasure. In fact, oftentimes we have a real hard time identifying that in ourselves. And yet, Narcissus and Goldman, in a way, understand that Goldman more than Narcissus at some point. And so it must have stirred up some interesting kind of responses that you have. And so I'm more interested in how that affected you. And although it's a little early, what I wanted to do the second part of this time is talk about who you identified with and why, and how you respond to that identification in these particular characters. And I surrender to death. It's on page 310, starting at the top. I lay there and had burning pains in my chest, and I was defending myself against them and screaming when I heard a laughing voice, a voice I had not heard since childhood. It was my mother's voice, a deep, womanly voice full of ecstasy and love. And then I saw that it was she, that she was with me, holding me in her lap, and that she had opened my breast and put her fingers between my ribs to pluck out my heart. When I saw and understood that, it no longer hurt. And now when the pains come back, they are not pains. They are not enemies. They are my mother's fingers taking my heart out. She works hard at it. Sometimes she presses down and moans as though in ecstasy. Sometimes she laughs and hums tender sounds. Sometimes she is not with me, but high above in heaven. And I see her face among the clouds, as large as a cloud. She floats there, smiling sadly. And her sad smile pulls at me and draws my heart out of my chest. One of the wonderful things about that kind of symbology, kind of talks about ecstasy and pain, just how he talks about childbirth and death, that they are so inexorably unified. I'll leave you with that delightful thing, project, which this is sort of the analog to from last semester's class. I'm usually reluctant to share these with other students because then they start thinking that this is what I want you to do, which isn't the case. But I thought that with time and materials being a problem, this might help you kind of determine some of the potentials and possibilities. So I thought I'd share those with you.
It's weird. Afterwards. My only contact with this class is seeing my friends and wingmates and people around campus carrying these weird things around campus. You look and say, ah, ISP.
Is that where they are going around doing the things on the wall with the tape?
No, that was just the project.
Oh,
that's
cool.
Well,
is that you guys?
My roommates, Mimi and Tia, they were up all night and they heard that project was due. Our room was a disaster for a week before it was due. Nice. And it was pretty interesting.
Mimi really got off on the class. In fact, she keeps coming around fairly regularly to check in with me, see how things are going.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you just reminded me I needed to send her a postcard she wanted to get. Well, what are your personal responses? Which one of these guys did you identify with? How did you feel about this book? Let's fill it all out on the bricks here, the stones. Chris did spy on you guys, and what she said was a lot of you guys did have some personal reactions to this book that were intense, and she admitted that it happened, and no one is bringing them out on the table.
You're just feeling that because that's what happened inside you.
Are you embarrassed? You're trying to get
it. Yeah, I'm embarrassed.
Good. Okay, this is what.
This is a true example of embarrassment.
Because you're empowering, you're beefing it. I did not say spy. I said that people had. Someone had told me that the last 8 pages were going to be very important to me to open my heart to them when I read them and not just read them with my eyes. So if that's spying, then I'm guilty.
No, you didn't spy. But you said that other people had some intense reactions to the book. And so I just thought
sounds
it was
like
communication.
I really related to Goldman myself, a lot of things he did through his life. He seemed to be always going forward and looking for what he wanted in life or what he was missing or whatever, and I've been kind of doing that my whole life. Going from one place, I can't stay too long in one place. That's one of the reasons I came here. I couldn't stay at POU for another. If I could get away, I'd get away. And this country, too, I gotta get out, move around. Can't stay in one place. Always going, looking for something, but I don't know what I'm looking for all the time. And also, it seems like he said something where when he was in the Bishop's City, he saw the people milling around, doing this, doing that, and he goes, what's the use of it all? They're just going, waking up, doing this, yelling, selling fish. He didn't see any point in it, too much. And that's what I do a lot. I go, I can't stay there and work. So, I don't know, it seems like that's why I haven't had a job ever. You know, I can't stay here and do this.
Comments?
Yes. I think I'm a narcissist who wants to be a Goldman.
Me too.
Point missed.
You want to elaborate that at all, David, or you want to just sort of go hide now?
I think that I could be real content being in one place or. Or, you know, let's say if I want to become a monk or something, I think that's really what I want to do, I'd be content. But I also have a side of me that hates to be in the same place all the time. And I like to go out and take trips and stuff like that. I don't want to be confined, but I'm content. So I guess I'm a little bit some more narcissistic.
I think I'm a Goldman who thinks he's a narcissist. That I, oh, now I have to say why. I think that I have a lot of I feel like what Bob was saying not yesterday about the test, that you have some of the things that you like are just skills that you have learned, like learning to be right-handed and learning to do things with left hand, that you're not really most comfortable doing that, but you have learned to do that. And I think I've learned to be a narcissist well, but really deep inside I'm a Goldman. And I try and be a, and the narcissist side tries to make me look like a narcissist. I mean, screen my Goldman-ness. Maybe I'll get back to it later.
I don't know which one's first.
I just have a comment on that our society wants us to be narcissists. And so that's how, I think that's the way it is with a lot of people, that they make you think you have to be that way.
I disagree. I feel like I'm a narcissist that I felt pressured to be a Goldman. Because for me, for a while I thought I'm doing something wrong because I'm not a Goldman and I'm not going out and experiencing all these things that other people are, but I think now I feel like it's kind of, you have to sort of make a choice and I'm content being an artist, and I never really realized it before because so many people were saying, you know, I felt like really pressured that I needed to be like the other way. I think of like when I went to PhD and I felt really pressured to be a businesswoman, you know, and get a business major and go out and be a single, successful woman. And yet,
what my decision is now is that I'm going to be a teacher and eventually maybe someday be a counselor. And I really want to be a mother and I want to be a wife. And so I feel like that's sort of the golden or the narcissist in me.
Just a second time. So that you feel that the Goldman type is the type who would be a business major?
The type that goes out and, experiences. Not the...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Anyone disagree with that?
I do, yeah.
I can see your point, though. Because Tom, first, though.
I think it's a different point of view, kind of, on what is your personal goal. I mean, if I think that what you're saying to me is that you're a narcissist if you go out and do something other than, I think I'm lost.
Would you like to surrender the floor or want to keep struggling with that?
I think what she's saying is, what we're saying is that I think Goldman would be an art major and our narcissist would be a business engineering major. Usually that's what you think, but from her point of view, a narcissist is, I think my terminology is wrong and it's going to get me in trouble, but our narcissist is someone who's content and at what it, where he's at, or doing what he's doing there. And a Goldman wants to go out and do new things and just go out and push himself to the limit. Mm-hmm. And
you think business majors push themselves to the limit?
Well, the way she looks at it, being a business major was, for her, was pushing her to a limit, because that's not what she wants to do. She doesn't feel that inside drive to go out and be successful. That's not what she thinks successful
is. Contrasting that to being a mother and a good wife. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at those two, then the business person is one who's going out there and going for it. In my head, that's not the way I look at it. I know exactly what she's saying.
I have a problem stereotyping narcissists and Goldmans as two majors or wives or husbands or whatever. But I don't think we can do that. Because you can find a narcissist and a Goldman that's business major. And you can go to art and find a narcissist.
Okay.
And, I think we can't stereotype, we can't use majors. You have to use a person's personality, their inside.
I think that's what we're pursuing.
That's what I'm
going
to do.
Well, I wasn't focusing. I wasn't talking to you.
Go ahead, Tom, because you want to walk away.
I think I'm... A Theo trying to be a Brent while avoiding the Marty in me.
I love it.
See, I identified with Goldman a lot. Just him talking about that wandering. I mean, I love that type of thing. Just wandering, not knowing where I'm going. I love that sort of thing. And I'm a responsible person. I'm really responsible person, but I forget things. And I mean, here I'm an analytical engineering type major, but I'm cheering on Goldman. But I think he's a jerk too, because he's leaving a lot of destruction in his path.
I didn't call him Marty a jerk.
I might have said that the Marty in me is a jerk. But no, I don't think so. That's not what I meant. What I meant is I'd like to have a job where I could sit in an office, invent things, interact with people also for 9 months out of the year, and the other 3 months I'd get on my sailboat and go.
You can travel.
Have you thought about being a college teacher?
Mm. You gotta go to school so long.
No, you can be a college teacher while you go to school.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. But
you don't have to make
a career.
I think once you clarify it, you figure out ways to get it.
I think you have a bag of engineering.
I think one of the things that we're.
Engineering.
I could be another Dr.
Ruth. You could teach integrated studies.
Does Christine have something to say?
Sorry,
Theo. I just want to say that Meg wanted to say something a long time ago, and everybody started talking, and she never got a chance to say it.
I was just going to say the difference between Christine and I is an example of what we were talking about a week ago Friday about definitions. Because I think we were talking about society making us be the same thing. It was just on our definition of Goldman and Narcissa, because what she thought Goldman was is some of the definition I would use for Narcissa.
So let's straighten this out a little bit, so maybe we can clarify it without having to use majors as the...
It's called modern German thing.
What, let's see if we can, in fact, if you wouldn't mind sort of writing these down, since my pen has stopped working conveniently.
Would you like to borrow a pen, Maury?
I'll be happy to do it that way.
It's about time you learned how to write. Can you read?
No, not especially my writing.
Do you like watching TV?
Yeah, well, now clarifying what a Goldman is and what a Narcissus is.
Okay, yeah, let's see if we can figure out in general terms what is Narcissus and what is Goldman.
Thanks, me.
So that we all think it's the same thing?
Yeah, so we're all talking the same language. Mm-hmm.
Narcissus is masculinity, Goldman is rimmed out of the book.
Okay, let's continue. Even though they're general, let's just sort of keep going.
Narcissus is a thinker and Goldman is a feeling.
Okay, thinking, feeling. Okay, what else?
Goldman's free fun and Narcissus is structured.
Okay, so far what we have is Narcissus is masculine, thinker, structured. Goldman is feminine, a feeler, and free.
Narcissus has a goal and Goldman doesn't.
Goal and goalless.
Goldman is a sinner and Narcissus is a saint. Gotta have controversy here.
Write it down. Talk about that.
Oh, we have to write it down.
Okay, write
regarded,
it down.
Regarded as society as, right?
Yeah.
Portrayed as, viewed as.
Narcissus is traditional and Goldman is. I don't know, maybe I should say conventional and Goldman is liberal.
Let's say unconventional.
Unconventional.
How about
some liberals are conventional.
Conservative.
No, let's not use liberal and conservative, I think it can get us in trouble. yes, Darren.
I wanted to go back to goal and no goal. Because I think Goldman did have a goal.
Can we go?
Even if it wasn't a general goal, he had a goal not to have a goal, even if he didn't have a goal, you know what I mean?
Well, in overall...
I'm having a fun time...
I hear your point, though. I think that's an excellent qualification.
I mean, he did have a goal.
I'm having a fun time labeling. Can we just label him, and then go back?
Yeah. Okay. All right?
What do we have so far?
Oh, we have Narcissus is a masculine. He's a thinker. He's structure. He's goal. He's a saint, and he's conventional. Goldman is feminine, feeling, free, goalless, a sinner, and unconventional.
Narcissus is a servant, and Goldman is a self-server.
Okay.
Okay. Is Narcissus is formal, and Goldman is informal.
Okay. Anyone else? Kate, you want to throw anything out there? Meg?
I see Narcissus is the type that would strive to get ahead, and I think that goes back to the goal. And Goldman is more
and versus process.
Pardon?
And product versus the process of getting there.
No, that is, but maybe that's what you say. So.
That's what was my problem with Christine. That's why I said that. Narcissa was. The type I see that was strike
for something.
Well, let's see if we can get him down into words. So think about it. You can put it into words as we move along because everybody else is going crazy. Which one is the biggest emergency?
Annette.
Okay.
Narcissist. She gets it all the time.
Because she talks so little. Go ahead.
But what I say is saying so much.
Say it quick.
Narcissist is control, and what's his face is surrender.
Woo! Okay.
Risk and not risk. Which is which?
Oh, she has to decide?
No.
Risk and...
Thanks. Who's risk and who's non-risk?
I'm still
risk. Goldman risk and risk.
Okay.
If I may borrow Christine's terminology and mix it up a little bit. Narcissus is an abstract sequential, and Goldman is a concrete random.
We'll discuss this later.
I think their religions are also very different. Monastery religion versus more gospel oriented.
Left brain, right brain. Wait a minute, I can't write this fast either. Okay, left and right.
That's no brain. Who's left and who's right?
You said gospel for Goldman.
Goldman is right.
Goldman is right.
God, Goldman is right. Gospel, and what would the other, what's the opposite of gospel oriented be?
Law-oriented.
Oh,
it
law-oriented.
Says
you're
law-oriented, but
law.
Okay.
What the rules
law.
Are.
Okay.
Okay.
Other people.
No, it's
chaos.
All right, keep going. What else we got?
Todd.
Goldman
does what's comfortable for him, and Narcissus makes himself comfortable.
Doing what it is scary.
Okay, how can we say that in words?
That was words.
Narcissus is so
adjust. How about one changes the situation and the other one
changes himself?
Changes. It's like from that test. Change the situation when you remove yourself from the situation.
Proactive and reactive.
Make yourself comfortable with the situation and make yourself.
And change the situation so you're comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's true of either of them, though. Because if you think about what does Narcissus do in the context of being the abbot, is he is in control. And so he can change things within the context that he's still creative within the context that he operates. That's a kind of a tricky one. But I'll add it if you really feel that's part of it.
One of them sets up his own context.
You said reactive and proactive. I'm not even sure that's certainly worthy of debating. But.
Yeah. So should we do unconformist and conformist?
That seems to be consistent, I think. Definitely. But I'll write down anything. Tom?
Narcissus is a Darren and Goldman is a Kai. They're roommates at school. That's just, I see those two and that's kind of what I see.
What was it?
Darren's Goldman.
Darren's Narcissus and Kai is Goldman. Mm-hmm.
Right.
They're together.
together. But a pair.
Goldman is free and Narcissus is a slave.
You said free, but not slave, so I think let me add that down there.
Servant.
I'm not like
a servant.
Well, we're just
because
using sort of very sort
choice.
Of polar. Yeah. Some people are slaves by choice, too. I'm not saying all are, but some are. A woman who sometimes calls herself a slave at home doesn't have to be there anymore. She's there by choice, whether she owns it or not. A man can be in the same position. Yes.
His analogy, Narcissus is a mountain and Goldman is a river.
Okay. That's a good one.
Who's the sun and who's the moon?
Who's the sun and who's the moon? Okay. Remember, they call themselves that in the book. Who's the sun?
Narcissus.
Why?
Because he likes the moon.
He's shining the
moon. Darren's getting into this.
Because the sun shines and he
doesn't.
What did the sun and the moon represent throughout history?
Day and night.
Yeah! Attaway Kai!
Light and darkness.
Yeah.
No.
I'll never
okay,
forget this.
Okay, keep going.
unknown to supernatural.
The sun is the origin and the moon is the...
The sun has traditionally been the male energy. And the foon, the foon, the moon represents speech problems. I think the moon has to do with the unconscious, which is often associated with the woman or female energy. Earth and the moon are often, yes, mystery, are often paired.
So, Narcissus is conscious and Goldman is unconscious? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, you could say that. Unconscious and subconscious.
Unconscious.
Unconscious.
Which is what?
Narcissus. Yeah, you could put that down too. I think their hair has
conscious or fixation.
So Goldman is white. Narcissus is dark.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
God.
Goldman.
Goldman.
Looks like
that's just.
Like well, there has to be some balance in the book somewhere.
There is a reason.
Any more?
They're both tongues. Yeah. There you go.
Sam, we didn't say anything about sensual.
We didn't say anything about sensual.
Who is sensual? Goldman is sensual. Narcissus is reserved.
Let's call it intellectual, because it's more opposite, sensual and reserved. A person can be reserved and very sensual.
Really?
Friend.
Goldman's hot pink and Narcissus brown or gray.
Boo! I would say Narcissus is midnight blue.
Yeah.
Hey, it's my
analogy. We don't use
it. Russian. I like the way that
corn
works.
I think that's
enough. Like, I'm on paper two.
Okay, circle the ones on yours. Which side?
Okay.
A or
B?
Why
that? Focus, please. I want to get through this so we can look at those slides. Okay, do we understand now what Narcissus is as opposed to what Goldman is? Do we all kind of agree with this?
No.
Okay, well, let's talk about it.
Part, Satan sinner. I vote we talk about Satan.
What's the third option?
I vote we do not.
What do you vote?
I vote we go back to Christine. She just wants to express her point of view.
I don't understand. Explain it to me.
Ask the question more specifically.
In the beginning, there was
I guess that I can't understand it, but it would change the way I feel about what I am, but I feel like I'm a combination of both then.
No way! You're blind or the other.
Don't be on a thin
post. I know the joke she told in the igloo, so I know what she... What's the igloo?
She doesn't.
We're not the best fella.
I'm not going to remove my gold.
I have a question to ask Meg.
Okay, what'd you say, Chris? Let's get everybody else to get there.
Okay. Meg, do you understand better about which is what Narcissus and Goldman are here?
Yeah, I don't know. I disagree with some of them. But
which ones do you have disagreements about?
Just most of them. Or?
Most
of them.
The goal and the servant, really. Wait, no, not that one.
Okay, the goal and goal, this one? Let's take them one at a time. Okay, what about it do you disagree with?
They both had goals.
What was Goldman's goal?
To just live life. Day to day.
But he had a goal to do that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it, because one can start diluting what a word means to the point where we can't use it anymore. So in terms of, one could say that having no goal is a goal, like Darren said.
Okay. Sometimes in there he did have a goal, like he had a goal to go to the master and become an artist for a while. Then he just changed his goal a lot, but he did have a goal.
Yeah, that's constantly revising.
That's good.
Or we could just say one is rigid and one is flexible.
Concrete pole versus abstract pole.
And I think that day-to-day...
I want to make sure that Manga has got this. Is that a little clear? Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead.
Just on here, too, that day-to-day thing versus, like, security, that's a really important thing. Yeah. Goldman doesn't really have any security as far as we're used to thinking.
Okay, what other ones did you have a problem with?
Ask other people. I mean... I can see. There's more to it. More to each of their personalities than these words.
Oh no.
Well, maybe we should paint a painting of each one of them.
Special art
make
project.
Inner and outer self.
Not paint
a
part of
it.
I think that it would be easier, you know, if you're explaining yourself, to just pick the words from Narcissus' side and going inside that. Fit you, because for me, that all of them,
the
narcissist don't fit me, and all of them,
golden. I mean, you can't stereotype yourself in one.
No, I'm sorry, Kate, I just can't.
What?
Abstract from one.
Yes, ma'am.
This
isn't profound, but I just like to state who I think I figured out who I am.
Okay.
I'm a narcissist, but. Okay, in a sense, but with a little bit of Goldman. But see, when my Goldman comes out too much for maybe my comfort or what I think I'm supposed to be or what I've been told to be, I try to pull it back in, and my narcissist is just trying to cover it up.
Okay, so you're a closet Goldman.
No, not totally, okay? But there's little things. Okay.
I guess that one wrong.
I'm sorry. Oh, dang it, I don't say that word.
And then you just talk.
Right? I am talking, damn it, shut up.
Should
I clarify myself?
I think you should.
About what you were saying or about...
In the ring.
Back
to your
corner.
No, it's great.
My
marshmallow's fun. Have you tried it? It's great.
Is your hand up, Kai?
Both of them.
You want to say something, Kai?
Yep.
Will you say something, Kai?
Please,
Kai, please.
What I think I am, I think I'm Kai part of me.
And what I think I am,
and
is
I guess you could relate it up. I think that the part of me that I know is mostly Goldman, except the way I think about my Goldman qualities is in a narcissist way.
I understand.
And
do you?
So I think that the self-server, informal, to lead off these things. Unconformist, Kai, that's on the list. Moon, sensual, day by day.
Hot pink.
Structure, then I was the one that I picked from Narcissus off the other side. And the thing about risk and stuff in the middle, I think I try to take risk, but sometimes I think I'm taking risks because I know what's going to happen, which then isn't a risk, so. But,
qualified risk taker.
And I think what Marty was saying, the same thing, that I can't stay in one place. I have to move around, go different places, not in the sense that I don't think that I'm happy moving around. I like to go to different places to help me find different parts of myself. And so I have to keep moving. I like women, so I guess that's Goldman quality. And the other ones, I'm not sure, someplace in between.
I don't think Goldman is a sinner and Narcissus is a saint.
you'd like to elaborate on that?
Yeah. Okay.
He says in his most pedantic fashion.
He's looking very justified. Look at him.
I think, after listening, using the justification, using Elmer's point of view, there's just part of my point of view, that
quoting authority.
Authority, the word of God.
Go ahead and say it, Leo.
I have to regroup. That in for Elmer, for Goldman.
That's a really
problem
there.
For Goldman, he was doing what he thought was right and was what was right for him. And if Narcissus tried to do it, be a Goldman, then Narcissus would have been a sinner. But if Goldman tried to be a Narcissus, Goldman would have been a sinner too, because he wasn't being himself.
I just got to he was kind of responding to that, so this stuff. Like, I agree with you, and I think you're wrong. That's all I have to say.
All right.
You're right, but for the
Meg.
I kind of agree with you, but I think as the terms are used, they mean a society looks at the two of them. Is seeing Narcissus as a saint and as Goldman as a sinner, meaning that he goes against
social. I don't accept that.
Well, that's good.
Don't you feel you're leaning more toward Goldman then? Do you feel that the basic society looks you more as a sinner?
I don't care what society thinks.
Thank you very much.
What? Kai, do you?
I want to bring this up. It's great. When we talk about society, basically we're talking about ourselves. Yeah. Society is people, okay? Society. And I remember the big conversation we had about the morality of Goldman. Okay? And that all ties in. And if we hadn't spent the day talking about his adultery and everything else, then I think we could easily brush off the saint-sinner thing, but I think it's something that half of us will feel one way, the other half will feel the other way. You know what I mean? Just like that one day we were struggling with whether, I think we already covered this issue, sinner-saint. But we didn't come out with any definite agreement on it.
Okay.
I want to hear what Lisa's thinking.
Yeah. Oh, you probably don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, we
do.
No, go ahead.
What
do
you
think?
I would say go
team. Go team.
Go ahead.
Chicken.
Go ahead. Chicken. All right. Bob. I'm going to say anything.
That's unfair.
I think we're losing it.
I know. Go.
No, I was just going to say with Brent how summed it up, just because I felt like we already covered that, and it would be not a waste of our time, but I wanted to cover more things than just get off on that subject again. And so I wanted to keep going, and we could come back to it later, maybe in a smaller group.
What subject would you like to go off on?
No, I mean, just keep talking about all these. I don't want to focus on the rightness and wrongness and goodness and badness of either of the characters, because I think it's really irrelevant.
I find it really relevant because I find that's a struggle within me. The Narcissus telling Goldman that he's in me, that it's evil, and that I shouldn't have the Goldman in me.
I think it's really relevant in that way, but I just don't want to look at it in Christian terms. I want to say I'm a sinner, and I don't want to just talk about it just in that context.
That's right. It's Friday, not Sunday.
Darren never told Kai that he was a sinner.
No, I'm gonna do it.
I mean, Narcissus never called Goldman a sinner.
Amen.
And Goldman never called Narcissus a saint. But if you were just sitting here thinking about it, and all of a sudden the words sinner and saint popped into your mind, who would you attach them to?
At the beginning of the book, midway,
yes.
Or at the end?
Right!
Good answer.
Yes.
But did, I feel like we're losing it here.
I feel like this is calling.
The outdoors is calling.
See, I think I agree that the terms are irrelevant. I mean, if you're talking to a Hare Krishna, he's going to have a different view of a sinner than a saint than a Rajneesh.
or not.
There's so many different groups, so many different people telling people. I mean, we're going to find 19 point, probably 16 different definitions of sinner and saint in here.
39.4.
And that was the entire point I was trying to bring up, although I didn't know it at the time.
Okay. Christine.
I want to hear what the people who haven't talked yet, what they think they are.
Would you like to specify each one of them?
Yes, well, all of them. Christine hasn't said anything yet, and Michelle, and Kathleen, and Jerry, and Julie, and Lori, and... No, you said Jerry. Did you say Jerry?
I can say
I changed my mind.
And Darren. And
Lori and
Kim Narcissus.
Okay, Darren already knows. And Lori and
Kim. I already told Avery.
I already told Darren.
Yeah. I have a choice.
You know who you are.
If they want to.
There we go.
Michelle! I don't know what I am. I'm confused. I feel like I'm really kind of a narcissist. But in a way, I kind of want to be a Goldman, but then I have been a Goldman kind of for a short period of time, and I haven't been happy with it. And so I'm being a narcissist, and even though once in a while I kind of. But
you're so, expecting to be talking to me, which are you?
Does that make sense? I mean, I feel like I'm a narcissist, and I wouldn't be happy being a Goldman, but sometimes I want to be just because it would be fun. You know, but I...
Vacation.
Something like that.
Take the Goldman vacation.
YouTube.
No comments for you.
Hello.
I don't want to answer
anymore. Oh, right.
You can tell how ready for death we are.
Anybody else?
Yeah, kind of.
Next. Number 49, please.
Oh, Brent. I already spoke though. Somebody else.
Golden says it right on his shirt. Sorry.
Okay. I.
That's
unconscious.
I've been a Goldman. And
true confessions.
I've been Goldman.
You're going to
give us specifics.
Okay. Quiet.
Focus.
Don't
even start. No.
Okay. First of all, I told the story when I was on my fraternity email. I was definitely a Goldman, okay? And then after that, I've kind of been becoming a narcissist. But Goldman and Harvey is still struggling inside to jump out, and so I'm kind of trying to balance them so we work together and cooperation.
That's what I was trying to say.
And it's hard because if I'm one, then I miss the other, and I'm a saint and a sinner at the same time, like everybody else is.
Lisa, thank you.
Why is being a Goldman a negative thing?
It's not.
I know, but I'm just asking Brent. I mean, because it seems like it's
a
negative. No, that's just what I picked up from what you said.
What you're projecting it.
No, I don't think it's negative at all.
You
I think
I'd be
well, because he didn't say it.
Cool.
I think maybe it's negative if either one of them takes over completely, like
that's
they have Darren and Ty.
No, let me answer. She's not.
That's not what he meant.
No.
That's cool.
Okay, when I was Goldman, I had a lot of fun. Okay.
But he doesn't have fun.
Get some respect.
Okay, now that I'm a narcissist, I have fun in a different kind of fun. Okay. and it's not as wild as the fun that it has around Goldman. But it's still fun, but there's still a wild part of me that wants to be wild. And yet, if I went back to being a Goldman, then there'd be the narcissist part of me that would want to be the narcissist part.
Mm-hmm. Is it bad to be wild?
No.
Not
I didn't say that.
Goldicist. The
grunt, maybe.
I'm
sappy.
Never
said that.
Why?
Never
again.
No,
but
you said
the same thing. You said so you couldn't be wild, and I don't get that.
I said I couldn't be wild.
Curious.
If that's how it sounded to me, you're getting too curious.
Okay, I'm struggling with it. I am, because of my Christianity. Because of the morality I believe put down in Scripture. So I'm struggling with that also. I'm stuck in there.
Carrie.
Me?
You had your hand up?
Ours is
too late.
I guess I'd have to say I'm a narcissist. So I wish part of Goldman would come out. But both of them have positive and negative aspects of each other. So for you. For me. Yeah. Should I clarify that?
The clarifier.
Not the
unifier.
Are you done with Carrie's stack?
Yeah.
I'm a narcissist, but I have fun too, but I think that's just part of my narcissist. I don't think that's Goldman coming out of me. I have the wild fun too sometimes, and I just consider that part of narcissist. I don't think that it has to be part of Goldman.
What part of you is
Goldman? I have fun. I'm more feeling than I think. I mean, as these categories go, I'm definitely feminine. I mean, I don't know, because I consider myself to be feminine.
I can go along with that.
Or it could be the Goldman. The Goldman and narcissist coming out.
Come on.
What do you have?
That'd be the same thing. Yes.
Can I ask a question?
No.
Well, when I hear everyone and people saying, "Well, either that they were once a Goldman or that blah blah blah," or but no one's saying they are a Goldman. A lot of and people seem to make claims to be that you do okay, that narcissists, and it seems like people don't aspire to be a Goldman, and that in that, you're making a statement that you think that being a Goldman is bad.
Mm-hmm.
That,
thank
that's,
you. That's
what
I tried to say, but I didn't
know.
It reminds me of a Larry Norman song. Larry Norman is the beginner, was kind of the beginning of Christian rock music, and one of his songs was, "Why should the devil have all the good music?" It's kind of like, why can't you have a rock beat with a Christian message, or why can't you have a wild beat with your own personal godly message? Why can't you have a Goldman beat with a narcissist message, or vice versa? You can have both. Make it loud, Todd.
I'm pissed because I'm a clown. So I read this going, that's exactly a reflection of myself.
Catch Gary and Todd louder.
Struggles dealing with. This is from Montaigne Essays. It is unfortunate that wisdom forbids you to be self-satisfied and trust in yourself, and always sends you away discontented and diffident. Whereas an opinionated boldness fills its possessor with joy and assurance. It is the most empty-headed that view other men with scorn and always return from the battle full of triumphant glee. What is more, their arrogant speech and cheerful looks most often give them the victory in the eyes of the bystanders, who are generally of a poor intelligence, incapable of judging and discerning where the advantage really lies. Obstinacy and heated argument are the sheerest proofs of its stupidity. Is there anything so positive, immovable, disdainful, meditative, grave, and solemn as an ass?
Todd, what does it mean to you?
Answer
It's. I see my.
We're striking the road today.
Getting back to dumb Narcissus and Golden and Andy Pammy. I'm a Golden trying to fool myself into being a Narcissus and doing a pretty good job of it. I think Tom's doing the same thing. I think. Well, yes, the balance of our. We're all either one. Or not. It's that we're either one. We're both. Except whatever part is stronger, we kind of lean towards that. Even though it might not be wholly, truly what we are. I guess I see myself as what Golden was in the first part of the book. Or God, I mean, back when I was going to seminary, a modern-day Golden, you know, his high aspirations of being this high aesthetic, pure self. I'm not really that. I'm an ass. But also, to some acceptance, what is so solemn and great as being an ass? And that's, I have real frustrations with myself and the image that I try to put across of myself in this class and be wise and all going, I got my head screwed together on the train. Yeah, it's cool. But yeah.
Yes. I see it. Going back to another ice peak class, experience of war, I see within me a struggle between my Goldman and Narcissus, and Goldman is the one that is justified, but Narcissus has outside intervention helping him from the society saying you should be a Narcissus. That kind of goes back to, I think, Rob.
Yes, which I definitely think we should get back to, Rob. Yes, sir.
Maybe each one of us wishes that there was an equal balance of both Narcissus and Golden in us. But there is a stronger side of either one that comes out. Did I say that?
Yes, you said that very well. I think you're right, except that Rolf brought out was an important point that is so veiled that we don't recognize it. And the recognition part that's important is that we basically do imbue Goldman with negative attributes, even if we can cloak them with the idea of being positive. One of them is that Goldman is essentially amoral. That is to say, Goldman is out there without moral. He is not interested in morals, he's not interested in rules, he is interested in self-expression in pretty much its purest form. That's something that, without doubt, all of us would definitely put a negative connotation on. And it's that, it's something we call selfish, it's something we don't allow ourselves, the idea of being able to give to the self first. And I think the important part of what Rolf said is that in order to identify that part of ourselves, in order to identify that part of Goldman, we have to own up to that reality. That's the first section of that whole thing. The other thing about it is that what does actually Goldman do for people? It's true that you said he left destruction in his wake. I disagree. I don't think Goldman left destruction in his wake. I think what Goldman left was love. And the point about that is that some people didn't know how to deal with love, or they couldn't stand up for themselves in the process of seeing Goldman's version of love. They couldn't just say no. They had to kind of do some other kind of dance in some way, which is why what happened at the Knight's castle, for instance. And so consequently, here's someone who's living up to himself in an amoral way, who is pretty much leaving a golden wake of love behind him, more than he's leaving any kind of destruction behind him. It's just that some people may not be able to know how to handle love, and that becomes hurtful to them. But I don't think Goldman hurt anybody.
I also feel that both men were trying to help everybody come into their own, everybody that they touched. They were both very caring. But Goldman's caring came out differently at the end than Narcissus.
First frame.
Christine,
too.
I had a lot of anger reading this book sometimes. Especially when, no people are going to jump on me because they'll have viewed Goldman differently, but it bothered me whenever Goldman equated love with sex. And he didn't do that all the time, but I saw it at least a few times. And it really pisses me off that this is another book out in public, just like movies, TV shows, that equates love with sex. Because I have not seen them as the same thing. I see love as a lot more lasting than one night. I really do. I see it as communication, talking. I see it as some type of personal commitment. I really don't think that
I don't know, it just made me
so mad. The encounter was it's too brief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I never got the impression that he loved those people that he had sex
with.
But
he's
dead again.
I don't believe there was love.
It's always,
well, but what I'm saying is, I think Hermann Hesse fell into just another. Hermann Hesse, when he wrote this book, was just like another author, another producer of a TV show, another or soap opera, whatever, that equated love with sex. And I totally disagree with it. And it just pisses me off that media and society and books do that.
Does anybody disagree with Brent's analysis of that? Okay, Lisa first, and Lisa will go around.
I don't want to go first because I don't know what I want to say yet. So
okay.
I haven't really thought about it. I know that I disagree. So I'll just sort of say kind of things that came to my mind. I think that he loved those people. We may not think that he did. People who disagree with me may not think he did. I think that he thought he did, and I think therefore he did. He loved sharing with those people. He loved experiencing that with them. To him, it was not just a roll in the hay. It was not just hormone activity. It was love because he was sharing an experience with them that absolutely filled him. And I don't think that it's just like another movie or another book or another TV show, because they were real people, he learned about, not intimately, each person. He didn't know the detail of their lives, but he respected each person for what they were, and he was willing to share himself with them. And that's why I think it was love and not lust, and why I don't think it was just sex, because he gave a part of himself to those people, and he didn't just forget them, he kept them within him in images.
I think he loved in that he gave love. Not, he wasn't taking. He gave love.
Kate, you had your hand up before. Did you want to add anything?
No, I'd like to.
Okay. I think he accepted each person he met. Loved them for what they were, because he said in the book that each person had a different style when they were having sex of expressing themselves, and he didn't lustfully take over and do what he wanted, but let them experience what they wanted and have a fulfilling experience in that way, opening themselves up to something maybe they hadn't experienced before.
June?
Who am I to define somebody else's love?
I think that's a good point. The thing that I wanted to add to that is that people, oftentimes we think that love is expressed between two people or one person. And for me, Goldman expressed love through living life, not loving one person, but through the style and quality that he had. And he paid a high price for it. When he made love with a woman, it was a sacred activity. And each time he went on, the book goes on to kind of call it that. Whether or not we associate it as having a sacred quality to it is another issue completely. But for him it was. I also don't think that any of the love scenes were purient, which is one of the things I think very different.
What does purient mean?
It wasn't there to titillate, it wasn't there to arouse. It was there to express a kind of a sensuousness as part of the sacred. And I think that's a real important part of the difference between somebody who will go on television and dance around people in bikinis for no real reason, or opposed to someone who talks about the sacredness of the act of lovemaking. And I think that Brent, you're right in the sense that there's an awful lot of emphasis on sex. But to me, this book didn't emphasize sex. It really did emphasize the sexual act as a manifestation of true love. Goldman's idea of true love was not Narcissus's idea of true love. It may not even be our idea of true love. But for him, his response to women was not taking, it was giving, which is one of the primary things for me I use in as a kind of context for looking at it. But it is subjective, ultimately. I don't think that even Hermann Hesse is saying everyone needs to go out and do that to bring love into the world. I think your hand's up, please.
I want to say, Brent, that I appreciated his statement for you, and just because I don't agree with it, I mean, I don't. Maybe you don't need to hear that affirmation, but I need to say it, because I can get pretty righteous myself and be justified, and I think that everyone's entitled to their own opinion, and I see where you're coming from. I have my own opinion yet, and I appreciate you saying that you were pissed off.
Yeah. I appreciate that, too.
Well, I mean, people are going to disagree with me.
Yeah.
And so, it's
Jackie wants
May
to
I just say on. Something?
Yes.
The only two women he remembered and talked about afterwards and said he really loved were Lydia and Rebecca, and he never slept with them. And I feel that if he had slept with them, eventually he would have tired of them. He loved Lena and lived with her, and she thought she was pregnant and died of the plague. And I think it was a good thing she died, because he would have left her too. And where would she have been?
Interesting.
Okay.
He was also needy.
I wonder if he would have loved her. I think when in that story, I was thinking that I had a feeling that he would, and that I knew that for the story to go on, to have him, I don't know, to be himself, that I'm almost that she was going to die for some reason. But because if he would have left, then our view of it would have been much different. But I wonder if he was getting tired of it. But I wonder what if he would have stayed, if he would have felt responsible.
Was there anything about Narcissus that really bothered people the same way that Goldman got, Brent got angry at Goldman? Was there anybody who got really mad at Narcissus?
I wish he could have been, and he couldn't have been because he was Narcissus, but I wish for him that he could have shared. I mean, I wish that he could have said to Goldman earlier that he loved him, that he could have told Abbot Daniel that he loved him. I wish that he could have shared his gift more instead of seeing it as a power gift. I wish he could have used it more. I guess I wasn't mad at him, but I felt bad because I felt like a lot of people were cheating out of gifts that he had.
You raise a really good point.
Well, I think Annette was before me. You had something to say about that. It was going to go Brent, Annette, then me.
Yeah, but what I had to say, I mean, we're not on that topic anymore.
You want to still say it, Annette?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well,
say it.
I think what I had to say is relevant, and it might be able to make a statement. I'm sorry I make an apology. But it was back when Todd was speaking, and maybe someone mentioned it, because sometimes I float in and sometimes I float out. But anyway, I'll just go for it. You know, Todd said something about the end of this thing he read. I can't remember all of it, but it had a twirler. And then when he spoke, he said, you know, he tries to think he's got it all together or something, but then, you know, sometimes he doesn't or something. Does somebody understand what I'm saying?
Not yet.
Okay, well, maybe there's confusion. You're still trying to figure out who you are or what's up there. And dang it, you don't know yet. Now these people got the point where I'm getting at, because they have to get that before I make my point. Do you understand where I am yet?
I can, because, yeah, I said it.
Okay.
I thought I'd figured out where I'd come from, and then I come to this grandiose thing that I realized, no, I really don't know where I've come to it.
Okay, that's, yeah, all right. My point is that is okay, because that is what we're doing our whole entire life. And maybe it's our goal that, Lord, I hope by the time right before I'm ready to go meet the Lord that I will have really found out who I really am. But I think we aren't going to know until then, and maybe some of us won't even know then. And then that's okay, because that we don't know now, because we're still trying. And every time we meet a new person, we're looking at that and seeing where that might be a part of it. But that's all I had to say.
Fine.
For
First of all, I wanted to thank Todd. I know that Lisa thanked me the other day when I, in class, started to cry. And to me, that made me really vulnerable to you guys. And I felt I could feel Todd's vulnerability. And I wanted to say thank you, Todd, because I think I came to the same realization that you did at that time. And then what happened to me last night was I had somebody in the community that I got to talk to. I talked to somebody in the community outside the class. And it was really refreshing because I felt like here I was in this group of kids that had only known me and professors that had only really known me for about a couple weeks. And did they really know who I was? And I felt like people were really doubting things that I really believed in myself. And it made me start to believe some of the things that I felt inside about myself. And I was really confused. And I needed an ear. I needed somebody in the community just to listen to me, to bounce ideas off of them. And for them not to say anything, for me to talk. And you know what I think? I think a lot of things that have been missing in this class, have you guys sat down and really thought about some of the things that you like about yourself? I mean, we are bringing out so much negative stuff in this class. I want you guys to remember that everybody has a gift. Everybody in this class does. And I want you guys to take 5 minutes today, not now, but 5 minutes to yourself, and really think about some of the things that you really like about yourself. I mean, that is so important to realize that you guys, I mean, I mean, there's some things I've really doubted in this class. And I, you know, I've thought about this over and over again, and I like those things about myself. And darn it, you know, you guys can like them or not, but I like them. And I mean, I found out millions of things that I have got to change, and I want to change. What I'm saying is that you guys give yourself credit for those things that you do have, and those things that other people really recognize. Because, I mean, so many times the negative can look over the bad. But I want you guys to know that each one of you guys are special. And that you guys have got to recognize that because that is your base and that's your foundation. And with that foundation, you know, all the negative you can start working on, but you can always go back to that foundation and say, yeah, I like this about myself and I don't like some of these negative things, but I'm gonna work on these one at a time. But you have that foundation of who you are and who you know you are. And you know, maybe you don't think you really know who you are, but there's things that you can pick out about yourself that you really like. And you know, even if it's one or two things, you know, I mean, that's a start, you know? And as you start to improve some of the negative things, then you start to like things about yourself. And you guys, I really encourage you to, you know, at least take 5 minutes to look on the positive side of things, because, you know, I really think that's important. And I just had to get that out, because, I don't know.
I have a question to ask. Do you really think this class has been so negative?
I think it's been truthfully not negative, negative. I don't know if I'm looking at it in terms of negative and positive. I guess, no, I think it has been painful, well, I think it's been painfully truthful for me, and I don't know about anybody else. And I can honestly say it's been really painfully truthful for me. So maybe that's why I look at it as kind of a positive, and I think that goes back. But it just really scares me, I guess, is that I feel like I'm learning so much truthful stuff about me. That